Hello and welcome to another episode of Tea Time with Mo and Som.
Hello, Som.
Hello, Mo. What is your drink of choice today?
So I'm back to my Lebanese tea. No milk, no sugar.
You didn't like the shortbread tea?
I did like it, but you didn't offer it to me again. Oh, and I haven't bought it yet.
I still got tea bags left. If people want shortbread tea, please come and find me. I'm in the hospital. If you work in the hospital, Chelsea, then you'll find me. Come and
just drop some an email.
Yes, drop me an email. But I'm saying that I'm back to my just standard cup of tea.
Yeah.
With my milk.
You can't go wrong with a standard cup of tea.
You know what? I have a cup of tea every day. Is this bad? Maybe two. Like, I don't feel my day's complete without a cup of tea.
Yeah, that's like average, right? It's like a, I don't know if that's the healthy recommended amount. I don't know. I don't want to find out, actually. It's tea time
with Mo and Som. The cup with English breakfast tea, not two sugars.
No milk, no sugar.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of myself and Som and do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Royal Marsden Hospital.
So our topic for today is decolonizing the language. So basically decolonizing the words that we use frequently without realizing that they stem from the colonization era. And they are rooted in...
They're rooted in colonialism?
In colonialism, imperialism.
Yes.
You know, racism and lots of all the isms, basically. So why are we talking about this song? Why is it important?
It is important. Just, you know, there was a moment today where it talked about somebody was saying something to me and I was like, oh, first world problems.
Mm.
Now, that in itself is problematic.
Exactly.
What
why
do we
is it
mean,
first
world problems? Yeah. You know, who told you that you're the first world?
Who ranked the first world as a first world?
And the
it was
third
people
world.
From the first world.
And who is the second world?
Yeah. Exactly. Why is there no second world?
Don't know.
But yeah, exactly. So because there is a lot of terms that we're still using and we don't kind of think it twice,
yeah, because
right?
Because first world is superior, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am better because I am first world.
So that's your first example about kind of language that we need to decolonize. Because a first world ranking that was done by people from what they labeled themselves as the first world. Mm. And they ranked everything else as third world. And that's now definitely a term that needs to be decolonized. And I think since the correct term now to use is developed and developing countries.
Oh, okay. When did this change? I didn't get that memo.
A while ago, I would say.
No, it's
but
true.
Again, I still find the problems with that term because saying it's a developed country and a developing country, like these developed countries, have they stopped developing? Like what is it, the criteria that is making them developed?
Yeah.
And like, that's it. They developed and they kind of mastered everything and that's it.
So you are the what we're aspiring to be.
Exactly. So that again in itself has some wrong connotation where you are the standard that everyone's trying to reach.
But what if your standard is not where I want to be? So that means I'm wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's not everyone wants to maybe like reach what you're trying to reach in these kind of parts of the world. So I wonder if there are newer terms now that they're using instead of developing or developed. We can look that up.
So.
Yeah, but I think that's, from what I know, those are the terms that we still use. So talking about this is important because you need language to humanize the experiences of people and appreciate the variations of the experiences.
So you saw this thing and it kept on talking about humanize. Sorry, I don't always agree with that. I don't.
Tell me why.
Because when we look at some of the terms that they were using, as they were saying that you shouldn't use the word slave.
Yeah.
You should use enslaved people.
Yeah.
That, to me, that takes away the brutality of what these people, they were slaves, you know.
They were
trying
slaves,
to gentle it. No, it was not gentle times.
But don't you find by keep saying this term slave, you're still putting them in that label and you're still keeping them in that box. You're not humanizing them, right? By saying enslaved person, you're saying that they are a person that have their own personality. They were just enslaved. They were forced to be a slave.
Yeah. They were forced to be as late. I agree with that, but I think maybe this one word was am I going to get cancelled?
No. I mean, it is your opinion.
And they were saying it should be an enslaver.
An enslaver rather than a slave master. So this is to kind of show that...
Maybe not the word master.
Yeah.
You are a slave owner. You own slaves. Like, why are we trying to make this pretty? The things that were going on there were not pretty. You were a slave owner. You owned people.
Exactly.
You need to earn that terminology.
But don't you find that the word enslave, it's actually kind of holding them more accountable. Like, you enslaved people, right? Mm. It's not taking away from the brutality. For me, it's just clarifying that, or like making it very obvious that you enslaved people and the person was enslaved. He was forced to be a slave, right? Mm. Because if you hear a slave, I don't know, did he make a choice to be a slave, right?
I think everybody appreciates or understands that if somebody's a slave, that's not by a choice. No?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think we just, some of the language, I think we're just trying to be too nicey-nicey about some of these things. Some of these things were not nice, you know, and we need to use the language because then it's going to, again and again, we're going to look at this terminology. And then before you know it, it's just going to be like nothing. Mm. We need to keep sometimes that element of brutality there.
That you get when you hear the word slave, it triggers something in you and you want to keep that to remind people of like the
experience.
The experience and like the how brutal that experience was, right?
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with you with that one. Maybe we don't need to be very politically correct.
No,
in everything.
I think there's some instances where we just have to be frank. It is what it is. Like we like beating around the bush and that's not saying that. No. Call it white. Call it what it is, please.
What about changing the term runaway slave to fugitive from slavery?
Okay, I'm not mad at that one.
Yeah. Or a self-emancipated person, as in they emancipated themselves. That one maybe is a bit too politically correct or too nice.
Self-emancipated person for a runaway.
For a runaway slave, yeah.
See? It's already lost. When you're saying self-emancipation, you have to show the story here is that you have ran away from something. And I think that's almost lost in that for me personally.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you start sitting here thinking, okay, what does that mean? I need you to know exactly what it means. Self-emancipated person. Come on.
No.
Come on.
Staying on the topic of slavery, what about the term slave mistress or concubines being changed to basically sexual violence or forced reproduction?
Rape victim.
Or rape victim.
That's what it should be.
Yeah, so do you agree with that one, that slave mistress doesn't, or, you know,
you're not
necessarily...
A mistress.
Yeah.
Like a mistress, aren't you there voluntarily?
Yeah, exactly. So it's reinforcing the fact that you might be doing this voluntarily, right?
Mm.
So I think with this particular kind of...
The perpetrator, what are we calling them? Does it say that in that?
Not in that piece of... material that I've read. So in this particular context with slavery, I think, some words maybe need to be changed, some words...
Mm-hmm.
As per your opinion, you know, you'd prefer to be kept as is.
Yeah.
To keep kind of the severity of the events that have took place. So
I would say that in some instances, if we move away from the sort of slavery, where it is appropriate to sort of decolonize this, you know, so for where I come from, Zambia, before that was called Rhodesia.
Okay.
After Cecil Rhodes. So we were Northern Rhodesia and then Zimbabwe was Southern Rhodesia. So when we then got our independence, we changed our name.
Okay.
I'm all for that. Why are we Rhodesia? Cecil Rhodes has got nothing to do with us. So we should not be named after him. So, in those
cases. So that's the kind of cases that maybe we're talking about today, where changing the language is definitely something that is needed. Another thing that maybe... staying on the topic of groups of people, using the word civilized versus the civilized world versus the barbaric, primitive, savage.
We're uncivilized, aren't we? Gosh, you eat with your hands. That's
a term that I still hear, you know, the civilized world. And I remember hearing about it Actually, I'm not going to say that, but it was during the Ukraine war.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were comparing that all these refugees are coming from a civilized world. They look civilized. You know, they don't look like your typical or stereotypical refugee. So it's definitely a term that I still see in the news.
Yeah, because if it doesn't fit into the white narrative, then it is uncivilized. Because if it's something that it's not understood by certain civilizations, then therefore it can't be civilized because this is not our norm.
Yeah, and
because it's outside of our norm,
exactly.
Of course it can't be right.
And the norm we're talking about here, it's a Eurocentric norm. So a lot of these terms come from a Eurocentric approach that was during 19th, 18th century, you know, the Enlightenment era, the obviously the British Empire. And everything that was different to how the world looked in, you know, Western Europe, what's called Western Europe, was deemed
uncivilized.
As uncivilized.
Yeah.
Even with the word tribe, you know, like the groups of people, you know, which is it's often used with African, Native American, and other minority ethnic, it held a negative connotation because it was reducing these people and giving them
tribalistic you know, like that.
Traits that they are kind of unchanging communities. They're timeless, they're backwards, they're superstitious, they're not enlightened, you know.
Even within those countries, so like, you know, countries where there are tribes, those people still have issues, you know. It's not all harmonious, you know. You still do have... We are also the perpetrators of that, you know. So in certain countries, they might say, oh, you're from that tribe.
Yeah.
Your people are like this. Yeah. Or you're from that tribe. Oh yeah, you're good because that tribe is known for this.
So you're saying it's not always just like, you know, white people against tribal
sometimes
people. Sometimes it's even within tribes, between tribes.
If we look at Rwanda for an example, the Hutus and the Tutsis, that was a tribal war, you know, and that was... Mm. Black against black. So the word tribe is not always we're saying that tribe is looked as uncivilized, etc., but within those communities themselves, they're not looking at it as uncivilized, but they will maybe have differences because they are certain tribes.
I was going to say that the term tribe is being claimed back now. So a lot of communities still use the word the tribe because they want to claim it back. And in that context, at least these tribes, they see each other for, you know, not with a lens of like, oh, being uncivilized or whatever, but for the complexity of the tribe itself.
Yeah.
And that's what you want
to
portray,
system.
Right?
Like, this is my tribe.
Yeah.
These
and
are
like,
my people.
The issues usually arise from maybe how the tribe is run, what kind of beliefs they have, what kind of habits they have. And that's what you want when you think of a tribe. You want to think about the complexity of that community rather than just automatically think like, oh, it's, you know, it's a group of people who is stuck in time at some point and, you know, they haven't seen the civilization or the civilized world. So,
but this civilization,
word
anyway, I'm still trying to work out where the second world is. Maybe we should Google
that.
Where is the second world?
While you're googling, I wanted to ask you a question. What would you call the biggest bedroom in your house?
See, I actually been watching like interior things. So here, it's called the master bedroom, isn't it?
Yeah.
But now they're trying to start calling it the primary.
Exactly.
Is it just the primary?
It's primary bedroom. But the term master bedroom is still widely used to refer to the biggest bedroom.
Why is master bedroom like
so
automatic?
From the kind of like the information I looked at, it doesn't necessarily stem from racism or like from the slavery era, but it does come from that time. And it does reinforce the fact that whoever have the bigger kind of bedroom is the master of the house. So the boss of the house. So it's kind of, it has a connotation. And as you said, you know, now real estate agencies are trying to use primary. I find that odd, the use of master bedroom.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It doesn't bother me.
Really? I mean, when I speak about my house, usually on a day-to-day basis, I'm speaking in Arabic. So, like, I don't use the term, right? It's
so
a
what
term
would the
I
term
use...
be in Arabic? Like, what would
the large bedroom
be? Just the big bedroom.
The big bedroom, right? It never had any connotation more than that. Or, like, the main bedroom. So, the main bedroom of the house. But, yeah, it is definitely a term that you can still see
on
real estate.
More like, you know, the biggest double, or it's a small double, you know, because we call it a double bedroom or a single.
Yeah, exactly. The smaller double.
Have I ever called it a master bedroom? I don't know, but...
Yeah. It doesn't bother you?
No, it doesn't bother me.
Well, it bothers a lot of people
out
there.
You are very valid to have those problems.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it does bother some people out there. And that's why there's an initiative to replace the word with primary bedroom.
When do these things go too far, though? Do you see
what
I mean?
Good question.
Because sometimes I think, I'm just taking things a little bit far here. Like, come on, people. Are there not bigger problems in the world? Like, where
there
is the line?
Definitely is. And,
like, who sat there one day and thought, you know what? Yeah, this term master bedroom is very problematic. We need to change it.
Would you think it's people who...
People who've got time on their...
They have ancestors who were victims of the slave trade.
Okay,
that's why,
but in that context, yeah. Because
so
if
I would imagine that these kind of objections would come from communities that are personally affected, you know, by the slave trade, and hearing those words still trigger, you know, the whole thing in them.
Like a plantation wedding.
Oh, what does that mean?
So in the days of slavery, they were on slave plantations.
Mm.
So those plantations now, some people, it's become quite fashionable or was fashionable to have a wedding on these plantations. Okay. So there were some celebrities who had weddings, some plantation weddings. And people are like, why would you do that? Why would you want to go and have your wedding in a place that symbolized such sadness?
That's very strange.
Oh, but then the building is beautiful.
Okay.
And then
the aesthetic of it.
The aesthetic,
like,
yes.
And very Instagrammable.
Yes, very Instagrammable. Because I think there was even on Airbnb, this has been like maybe a couple of years, where you could go and stay, you know, like the slave quarters.
Mm.
So now they've, on these plantations, you could go and have like they've made them pretty and whatever, and you could go and stay in the, it's like fetishizing slavery. Wild.
Wow. Yeah, that's very wild.
Very wild.
And where did you say that's happening?
In America.
In America. Okay.
Dear Americans, please
don't have a plantation wedding.
Yeah, that to me is definitely
yeah,
a problem.
Some further examples about this and, you know, words that infiltrated actually different domains. So we talked a bit about, you know, day-to-day use. I found this kind of interesting and surprising that in computing, in the computer world, you know, they use in software and that kind of thing, they use some terms. Like, for example, they use master and slave to refer to like a process or a software device that controls another. But that, again, there was initiatives to change this lingo. And I think now they're trying to use primary or replica or leader and follower. And like Python, one of the main or like one of the big coding languages in 2018, just stopped using the master slave. Other things that they use in computing, blacklist and the whitelist. Where blacklist is everything that is blocked, like IPs and emails and URLs, and whitelist is everything.
Web.
Yeah.
Everything
exactly. Or like the dark web.
Oh, the black, the bad.
So these terms are being changed now to blocklist and allow list.
That makes more sense.
Yeah, exactly. You don't need to refer to
it
as black and white.
You know, some of these terms, before I was really skeptical, like, oh God, here we go again. But now I think, okay, some of these things actually make sense.
Yeah. In the art world, there is a part of the gallery referred to as the peanut gallery.
Peanut gallery.
Yeah, I don't know if you've heard of this before.
I have not.
So these are the cheapest seats in the theater. And historically, these were the seats where black people used to sit.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is more of an American thing. I don't know if people in the UK have heard of that.
Oh, that's the, like when you go to the theater.
Yeah.
Isn't it like the stalls and things like that? I've never heard of the...
Yeah, maybe it's more of an American thing, but they are nowadays they refer to the peanut gallery where the critiques or hecklers, they sit and they have like uninformed opinions. Yeah. So it's still a problematic kind of term because it rises from the 19th century where black people used to sit in a certain area in the theater.
Interesting.
Yeah. And another example I'd want to give to kind of step away from the world here is for us in the Middle East, because the term Middle East in itself is a colonial term.
Mm.
It was coined by the British imperialists in the 19th century, and It was to define kind of the area from a European perspective. So again, we're talking from a Eurocentric perspective, where Europe is the center of the world.
Of course.
Then the Middle East would be the Middle East.
Where else?
And then
the
Far Asia would be like the Far East. Mm. Right. So that's where the term is rises from. Some new terms that are rising to replace the term Middle East is SWANA, which stands for Southwest Asia and North Africa.
Oh, okay.
So, or some people use the Levant. The Levant refers to the area of Lebanon, Jordan, Palestine, and Syria.
Sense.
So it's a specific area. So you either deconstruct the whole area into the Levant compared to North Africa, because there are different cultures also. Or the Gulf,
different.
You know, the Gulf, which is, you know, Saudi Arabia, UAE, Bahrain, they also have their own culture. Or if you want to still group everything together, the term SWANA emerged to refer to Southwest Asia and North Africa. Because technically I'm Southwest Asian as a Lebanese, but I would, you know, I still find it odd to do that because I've never been categorized as an Asian person, right?
No, you don't tend to categorize Arab people as Asian people.
Because not all Arab people are Asian people also, because, you know, again, some part of the Arab world falls in Africa. So some of them are North African. So
that's another conversation.
Yeah, it's definitely like another conversation.
Do they view themselves as African?
Yeah, exactly. Some of them do, some of them don't view themselves as Arabs. So even the identity of the Arab is controversial with some groups.
Okay, so what do they see themselves as?
Like, if I talk from experience, in Lebanon, a lot of people say they're not Arabs, they're Phoenicians. And Phoenicians are an older civilization that inhabited Lebanon.
Is it Venetian? Like, aren't Phoenicians from Venice? Like,
No, Phoenicians, P-H. Oh, something. I can't...
spelling bee, spell it.
So Phoenicians, because Lebanon historically was Phoenicia, and it was like a big empire, and it was a successful kind of empire. Some people in North Africa, they say they are Amazigh, which again, they're not Arab. It's again another ethnic group that historically didn't speak Arabic and existed before kind of the Arabic became the main language in Algeria, Morocco, and
gosh, every day is a history day on this podcast.
Yeah. So that's just one example from the Middle East.
I looked up Second World, and apparently
it
came out during the Cold War. The Second World referred to the communist bloc, primarily the Soviet Union and its Eastern European allies. So there you go.
Wow.
That's where the Second World is.
Wow, okay. So I'm guessing that's now no longer used.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, because I've never ever heard it used in the first place. First world, third world, second world, no.
Yeah.
Communist bloc, yes. I've heard that.
I haven't heard that term before, but we learned.
We are definitely learning. And like, if you look at healthcare, if we're talking about decolonizing the language there, a lot of the language is also quite Eurocentric.
Mm.
So in my area, where people are having sort of radiotherapy, the literature talks about the skin going red, you know, post-treatment.
Yeah.
But actually, if you have got a darker skin tone, your skin is not going to go red. So as a result of this sort of terminology, some people were having really bad skin toxicity, so burns to their skin, and it wasn't being recognized as that because it didn't present in the way that the literature said it should present, which was red.
Yeah.
You know, so this is where it can impact on your health.
Exactly.
As opposed to just general life.
Yeah. I think in addition to decolonizing the language, we need to decolonize the health literature, right?
Definitely.
So the health literature in itself needs, it's Eurocentric. A lot of the research is done within white populations.
So why is that? Are we not invited?
We're not invited. The research that comes from communities, you know, like maybe research from Africa or research from the Middle East is not taken as
seriously
to be incorporated in healthcare, you know, where we are here.
Also, we're mistrusting. We don't always trust the health system.
Exactly.
So then we don't participate. We might be asked, but we'll be like, actually, no, what do you want research on me? I want the drugs that you don't need researching.
Exactly.
I think
that's something
tested.
That we see within clinical trials. My field of work is that there's a lot of hesitance within the black community and people of color to get on clinical trials because there's mistrust on...
it's not what we do.
What is being done and what research, how the research is being conducted. Mm-hmm. So, it's a whole topic on itself that we can get into at some point. But to wrap this up and...
How do we wrap this up? What
do we do? So we have issues with our day-to-day language. What can we do on a personal level?
What can we do?
Question ourselves?
See, I think, again, this is one of those personal journey things where some of the language, some people... when it comes to things like this, it's a minefield, you know, because what I might not find a big deal might absolutely be a big deal to somebody, but I actually don't realize that actually this is a big deal, you know. So I can't just be dismissive of things because these have come about for a reason. Like you said, you know, for people in slave times, a master bedroom would be a very big deal. So the answer is I don't know.
There isn't maybe a straightforward answer. But as you said, on a personal level, we can always maybe, if we notice something that we're saying that just does not sound right, maybe question it, look it up. Or if you witness someone, or if you're having a conversation with someone and they say something that is, you know, definitely outdated, you can maybe call them out for it. Not in an aggressive way, but just like educate them.
You'd call somebody out for?
Like if I'm having a conversation with someone and they mention the first world, you know? I'm like, I would call them out for it.
Okay. Would you say call it out or just say, oh, do you? Because calling out can seem like a bit like.
No, that's not what I mean. I mean, calling out in a very nice and gentle and respectful way, you know, as in challenging what they said.
Okay. So maybe not. I would say if somebody uses the term first world, then I'll say, oh, you know what? Maybe I'll just highlight the fact that terminology has changed.
Yeah.
As they're aware.
It doesn't need to be a fight, right?
No, it doesn't.
Not everything is a
fight.
But
when we say calling out, it normally implies that we're looking to...
I apologize about the term. That's not my intention. It got lost in translation, so...
No. But a lot of people would say that. It's very common to say, I'm going to call it out. But when we say call it out, it does come across... the interpretation of it. But what is the alternative?
Yeah.
Because we always say on this pod, call it out.
Call
it out.
Maybe we should start using gentler terms and ask people nicely.
We need to research what these gentler terms are so then we can come back and tell the people.
That's de-aggressifying the language, you know. That's a word. One advice I would say maybe expand and diversify the sources you kind of look into, the books you read, the people you hang out with, you know, try and read the book by a black person or person of color, just so you learn maybe more about these things or about different languages to use.
We're actually going to have some books in the library, so look out for that.
So we're in the process of purchasing books that relates to the Reach Forum that you will soon be able to find in our local library, both in Chelsea and Sutton. So just general education and knowledge. And that is it.
That's
from us,
folks.
Today, that's all, folks. Thank
Come
you
and find me for the shortbread tea.
Oh yes, before they run out. And if you like it, email M&S and get them to sponsor us. And thank you for listening. And we'll see you next time.
See you next time. What are you drinking today? I was going to say song. Why am I?
Again.